What we'd like to talk to you about today is a project that provided a new format for input of data into the BioSense data warehouse and application. And this project was a pilot project with Beth Israel Deaconess and the BioSense team. Okay, there we go. So I'll start out little bit of background about Beth Israel itself. They were founded in, Deaconess was founded in 1896. They're a teaching hospital for Harvard Medical School, 601 licensed beds, including a level one trauma center. And their primary areas of service and specialty are surgery and cardiac, cancer, pulmonary, and thoracic. They were listed in 2007 amongst America's best hospitals, and they've developed a lot of their internal IT infrastructure themselves as a function of that. Just to give you a little bit of background for those people that may not be as familiar with BioSense, BioSense is a national program that collects data real-time from providers across the country, and that information is analyzed and used for biosurveillance and health situational awareness. Today, BioSense collects over a million transactions a day of admissions, census, emergency department, laboratory orders and results, radiology orders and results, and pharmacy orders. And our data sources include state and regional surveillance systems, individual hospitals and healthcare systems, national laboratories, the Department of Defense, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Beth Israel happened to be one of the first 10 sites that provided information on a real-time basis to BioSense back in December of 2005. And at that time, they were really sending a very limited data set, strictly the ED information, so from their trauma center. So we, one of the big changes with this project was to expand that data set. Just to give you a little flavor of the coverage that BioSense receives from facilities across the country, this is a most recent August breakdown of the red are primarily the non-governmental providers. So as I was saying, back in 2005, when Beth Israel started sending data, it was ED data, and it was in a pipe-delimited flat file format, and it was being extracted from their clinical information and hospital information systems. They didn't really have APIs to output that information. Both BioSense and Beth Israel wanted to expand and increase the number of data types that were being transmitted to include the full spectrum of elements of interest to BioSense, which included ADT, census, lab, radiology, and pharmacy, as well as the ED data. So it was decided that we'd develop a new extract to encompass all those additional data types. John Halamka, who's the CIO at Beth Israel, and he's also the chair of the HITSB panel, basically proposed that we move towards the emerging HITSB standard at the time. So trying to lead the target a little bit. And use this as an opportunity for proof of concept utilizing the XML standards. At that time, BioSense was receiving everything in HL7.25 pipe delimited, and that was the standard format that we were transmitting data from all of the data sources. So as a pilot for this, Beth Israel committed that they would send the full set of BioSense data types in this new XML format. So just to give you a little bit of depiction about how the data flows, this would be the layout that we would commonly see from a data source. Whatever the source on the left-hand side, whatever the source systems were, oftentimes the particularly hospital providers will have an interface engine that basically does most of their message transmission, both internally and then sometimes externally. And generally BioSense implements what we call the BioSense Integrator, which is a new server that has both the Rhapsody interface engine, a function called the linker that does the de-identification of the data, and then a FinMS sender function. And so we subscribe to messages that are flowing within the hospital, translate them into HL7.25, put in the standard vocabulary, and then transmit them securely to CDC through FinMS. They're received in the BioSense queue. There's a data message broker that basically transfers the data from FinMS, edits and parses it, and then reformats it in XML for load into the data warehouse. So when we are looking at what we were proposing to do with Beth Israel, here were some of the required changes. Bob and his team had to develop the extract routines for the new data types that we were looking for. He had already developed a linker type application function within his system for de-identification, so that would have to be linked into these new APIs. And then format the output in the BioSense XML format that we had agreed. So that was on their side. On the CDC side, we needed to create a new BioSense queue from FinMS for these XML messages, and then a separate route within the data message broker so that it would bypass all the standard edits and reformatting and basically just pass the data on to the data warehouse. So this is what the new architecture looked like. Specific to Beth Israel, Beth Israel has a Red Hat Enterprise 4 cluster that runs their clinical and HIS information systems, and that's what outputs the XML, creates the XML messages, does the de-identification, and outputs the message to their FinMS sender, which is on a separate server. It goes to CDC into the new XML queue within BioSense, and then basically through a new route that the data message broker group built that processes that new message type. So just a recap of the project. As I mentioned, their initial feed began end of December 2005 as one of the original 10 sites. Then we originally had planned to activate the new data types in phases and stages, so ADT and then lab and then radiology and then pharmacy. But there were delays on the receiving end, getting the changes to the DMB system. So we, in the end, we opted to actually activate the entire new feed, what we would call Big Bang, all at the same time. So development and system testing were completed in November 2007. We began our integrated testing end-to-end, end of March, and the actual new XML feed went into production on the 2nd of May. And now Beth Israel is probably one of the most, if not the most comprehensive of all of our BioSense data feeds in terms of all the types and elements of the messages that they send us. They're sending 5,000 messages a day on average, every 15 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the process has proven to be very reliable. We haven't had any disruption or downtime, and so I think it was a very successful pilot for this new input option into BioSense. The benefits, I think, from the standpoint of the CDC and the standpoint of BioSense, big benefit was we now have a second proven format for accepting data from data sources into the BioSense system. Hopefully, as more and more systems are outputting in that standard format, it'll make the enablement of additional data sources to BioSense a lot easier and a lot more cost effective. From Beth Israel's standpoint, and I think Bob can talk to this if you have any questions, they now have a standard XML output that they can use for other uses, feeding other applications or other public health applications. They've already reused a lot of their experience with this new feed and also some of the new code in other projects that they're using. So they've been able to leverage this effort. And I think the link itself and the success of the link has proven the practicality and the benefit of implementing the HITSB standards to streamline the exchange of data. And I think I just threw in one final slide. I think this talks to where BioSense is headed in the future. I mean, we see more in the future the BioSense being just one of the nodes on a larger grid of data. And obviously, the more standard the transmission of data, the more effective that, and the sooner we can get to that type of environment we will be. So I won't try to speak to this, but this is really the direction that we see BioSense heading in the future. So that, I don't know if you want to take questions on this part and then, or just from all four of us.
Yes, so if we can go ahead and we'll do it at the end for all four.
All right, we're done.
Okay, then we have enough room for everybody at the panel. I'll ask that you all stand up and answer your questions when the time comes. So I'll open it up to the audience first for some questions for any of the participants.
Yeah.
I understand there's all these HITSB standards and all these standards. How does that and FIN certification all relate to each other? I'm confused. I'm at the state level. I'm confused at which of these standards I should be looking at and whether or not they're all really working together.
Steve, I think that's...
I'm not standing up to answer it. Did you notice these things? And actually, you've asked a very I think, a very pertinent question, and unfortunately, I'm, in one sense, not going to give you a satisfactory answer. HITSB is a process that was developed by the Secretary and the Office of the National Coordinator to introduce a standard and certification process that involves the exchange of information from electronic health records in the private sector to health information exchange entities within the private sector. So it's primarily concerned with clinical information and is primarily concerned with information that's of partial use for public health. We do not have an interest in the vast milieu of clinical information that goes between these bodies. We have interest in the specific aspects of that information, and we have interest in specific aspects sent to us in a specific way. For example, if we get a laboratory report that's positive or indications of an organism that's of public health interest, actually just sending that laboratory report to public health is useful, but it tweaks our interest. It doesn't really totally fulfill reporting requirements in most situations. So what that leads to is the idea of FIN certification. FIN certification is a very similar process to what has gone on in the HITSB and the private sector, and adding to that a look at your systems to see if they will meet public health needs. In some cases, what exists in the HITSB section, and as Austin pointed out, we are starting to reuse that information so that it can apply to both segments. It may be very much the same. And if you look at the HITSB specs, yes, you may meet FIN certification. But there are other aspects that when we've taken a look at the public health process, we've decided as a public health community that there are other things of interest to public health. One key example is in the privacy and security of information. As I noted when I started my talk, we've taken an acute interest in that from the very beginning. We use a messaging structure, FinMS, which exceeds what anyone will do in the private sector for their exchange of information. And that's what we're comfortable with. So if we're looking at FIN certification, we would look to something that has that type of secure connection infrastructure, whereas the private sector would not. I don't think that's a complete answer, but I do believe there are some segments, you know, at this FIN conference that are going to explore what's going on right now with FIN certification. Ray or Glenn, if you want to add.
No, you did a really good job with that.
Faking it well, thank you.
Yes. Steve helped us significantly. I'm Glenn Moore with the Division of Labs Management and Consultation. We have the oversight for FIN requirements development, collaborative development, and the certification process. The only thing I would add to what Steve said is that the five requirements and the certifications that look at the capability and capacity of state and local health department to meet those requirements is really looking at systems and how well they adhere to the standards, the message spec guides, as well as the structure, encapsulating the HITSB standards, HL7 standards, and any other standards that have been propagated by other SDOs. So we have, in fact, the new certification criteria process was released last week, so if you've not had the opportunity to take a look at that, it is available for consumption on our website.
Other questions? Barry, I think you had one.
Yeah, I was just curious if at this room was using this feed. You alluded to some other applications, and I was wondering if you could maybe elucidate on that a little bit.
Sure. First, let me, if I can give you a real short answer to the previous question. If you want to look at feeds today, it's pretty much the 2.5 standard. If you're looking a little bit in the future, and where everybody I think is going to be going, it's towards the C32 style documents. So in terms of looking at the standards, if you have an immediate need, is this fair? Yeah, the 2.5 is the way you would go to get a feed today. But I would keep an eye on the C32, CDA type standards, and that's where we want to go in the future. Other things Beth Israel is doing, most recently, and in fact, we just went live on Saturday with a feed using C32 summary documents for Social Security Administration for their disability approval process. We're doing a pilot project with them where instead of requesting a paper record from the hospital and other clinics, et cetera, that a patient may have gone to for their problem, which is resulting in a request for disability, they can now electronically make the request once they have a good release from the patient, and they can turn it around in seconds instead of weeks. We hope to drop the time to approval of a disability down dramatically. And in fact, there's a parallel process going on to see what financial effect that would have. They spend about $500 million right now in reimbursing people for the paper record pulls. So there are resources available.
Steve, you want to add to
that? Just as a quick comment on actually two comments on that. The first comment is, and this was mentioned, John Halemko, who spoke here last year, is the CIO at Beth Deaconess. And I think you're seeing just in this talk of the far-sighted vision that John has in putting together and reusing pieces of existing systems for multi-purposes. And it needs to be complimented, and I'm very pleased to see that. The second thing I wanted to comment was something that you said, and this is something we need to start being very careful about. How many people in this room know C32? Backwards, forwards, sideways, etc. C32 is HIT-SPE jargon. It's one of the constructs. You know, when I said we create transaction packages, we create constructs, we build things together. And I just wanted to point out, C32 just happens to be HIT-SPE jargon. In this particular case, it's HIT-SPE jargon for a structured clinical document architecture formed set of pieces of clinical information. There is in the C32 document, and we use this in the immunization use case, that is involved with sending and putting together immunization information to send to mostly a personal health record and a parent. It's not complete immunization record. So we have to be careful when we talk about C32 if we actually mean just that, the aspects of the clinical information put in the C32 document, or if we're talking about the broader aspect of clinical document architecture, which is what we're thinking about moving public health reporting towards. And if we do that, and we do introduce a clinical document architecture for public health case reporting, it will not look like the C32 document, because we think about public health case reporting differently than the way a clinician thinks about the type of information you would exchange with another clinician. So I just wanted to bring that up because
sure.
It is a important distinction.
You'd base it on the CDA?
Huh?
You'd base it on the CDA?
Oh, yeah, we're going to do it as a CDA. But it will. The primary difference, we'll probably be able to reuse your document, your data types, you know, where they are the same, but what will be mostly different is the sections of the CDA will be different.
And in fact, on that point, you using the CDA document and pointing to the reusability of the data types and the segments also means that as we move forward even to V3, we'll be able to reuse those same data types.
I think kind of as a follow-up, Bob was mentioning before the presentation that they actually are sending biosurveillance data to four different receiving systems, and one of which is BioSense. You want to just mention what those are? And I know they're not all in the same format. In fact, they aren't in the
no,
same format.
No, two of them are in the same format. No.
Right.
We have a public health, quite a good public health group in the Boston area. We also have a Mass Public Health, and Children's Hospital is has a project going which actually uses a geographic methodology which allows them to find hotspots. And we send very similar data to each of those organizations. What I have done is the linker database that you mentioned, we use similarly for three of the, all the public health and the BioSense feed, so that if there is a question about a case, we can, they can actually cross-reference between those different public health databases and BioSense.
Great.
Are there other questions from the group? I have a couple of questions. So does the linker database maintain the HIPAA log for these outgoing messages as well?
No, each application maintains that separately. So it's basically you're de-identifying the case. And so it's just a cross-reference.
Right. So which gets to my second question is, so whether the data is de-identified or not, there's still a requirement that is the message is transmitted, that some that a HIPAA log entry get written, since they're not covered by a specific IRB, and in some cases are not, or at least to public health. So it does require that when you send it to Boston, to places where you have identification of that, that there's a HIPAA entry written somewhere.
Yeah, we required an IRB for the Children's Project, not for BioSense, because the HIPAA law itself explicitly includes CDC.
Public health.
We do keep a log.
Right. So the other question that follows on that is, when you, if you have an outbreak, and potentially CDC might be the only one that recognizes that it is an outbreak because they're getting it across a broader area, is there a way for them to go back in through Linker then and re-identify the case?
There's no way CDC can do that. There's a mechanism by which they can request and will generate the information for it. Yeah.
So the Linker maintains that?
Correct.
Great. Steve, I have a question probably for both you and Austin a little bit. In the migration from the, well, it probably goes to Bob too. So from in the migration from the V2 constructs to the V3 constructs, there's a lot you can say in V3 that you can't say in V2, a lot that you can say in CDA, the V3 data types used in CDA. Specifically when we look at post-coordination and some of the other issues around vocabulary, do you see an evolution that is graceful from the 2.5 constructs to V3 from bringing more complex data in? Or do you see that as more a stop and chop, where you say we've been using these in the HITSV world, but they just don't support this, so now here's a new way to do it?
Well, HITSV, in adopting their parallel document and 2.5 messaging approach, is trying to create a bridge mechanism for doing exactly what you're talking about. The problem is that the typically when you get to things like post-coordinated SNOMED, where you can come up with some fairly complex statements that can be readily communicated in V3, in particular CDA, there is no good way to communicate that in 2.x today. And so when you're running into situations where you need that richness, 2.x just will not meet your requirements. So in that sense, that there is no bridge between those two. So if your requirements come to the point where you need that level of complexity, you're going to have to migrate to V3, whether it's CDA or V3 messaging. I don't see that happening in a lot of areas, such as basic laboratory reporting, because that's been chugging along on 2.x for a long time, and probably will for a long time.
So, and unfortunately, SNOMED doesn't allow you to modify organisms to say something like that on microscopy, the organism was seen intracellularly, because you can't really do that. But so that's a problem with SNOMED. The question for Steve is, we now have the mandate that we're moving to ICD-10. Which allows for fairly complicated post-coordination for expressing diagnoses. And do you see HITSB having to reevaluate their 2.x approach at that time?
I think that as we confront the introduction of ICD-10-CM into the reporting, the administrative reporting world, we're probably going to rethink all that we're doing, both with how we're using SNOMED, how we're using ICD-10, and I don't think it's just going to be in HITSB. I think it's going to be everywhere. You know, there's been a basic comment, and I think it's quite correct, that ICD-9-CM does not contain enough information, that we do have to go to SNOMED to provide the clinical richness that we do need to report the information of what's going on with the patient. I think we may rethink some of that with ICD-10-CM, and I think we're going to see a more complicated interplay going on between 10-CM and SNOMED, because I think we're all aware that you can't really develop a good map between 9-CM and SNOMED. And I'm not certain you can with 10-CM, but I think we can get closer.
So I'm not sure if Lane can answer this question. Barry might be able to, he's in the room. But from the biosurveillance perspective, it means a redefinition of the syndromes and subsyndromes, which are ICD-9 based as well. You see that as a benefit for ICD-10 coming along? Or?
I think Barry can answer that question.
But you know, I can give you the first surface answer to that question. For year one, when ICD-10 comes into play, there will be an official coordination between what the 10 codes are and the 9 codes are. So your syndromic groupings, whatever your existing, even your DRGs, that's going to be defined year one. Now, if you're going to ask me what's going to happen in year two, I have to leave the room.
Any other questions? All right, well, we want to thank our panelists.